This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who is low-key in love with the TARDIS, Adam Farmer.
That's a good line. Low-key in love. She likes to get in trouble and she has dresses, likes dresses. Either way, good line. Good line.
And the Doctor's response was even better. Me too. Yes.
Me too.
We all know the Doctor's true love is the TARDIS.
Of course. Yeah. That is a great episode in and of itself.
You have Rose, you have River, but I mean the one that's been with him the whole time is the TARDIS, so.
And it in reality stole him, or she stole him.
So we are going to be talking about the latest episode of Doctor Who, Thin Ice, which is the third episode of the season. We've had our ups, we've had our downs, we'll see which direction this one goes. That's my opinion.
Two episodes. There hasn't been an up or a down. There's just been some slight variation. That's where we're at right now.
We do not have too much news to talk about other than just reviewing this episode, so we probably are going to jump right into it in a second. But before we do, we did want to mention we had gotten a comment from one of our listeners. One of our listeners who likes to comment on things that we do.
We like that they like to comment. That's awesome.
We love this. We love to get interaction from our listeners, and this is one of our listeners who interacts with us on a really pretty regular basis. And we have indirectly referred to him on the show, but I don't know if we've ever directly referred to him on the show.
I mean, maybe initially.
Maybe.
Possibly.
He may have gotten a mention in the past, but... So we are talking about our friend Danny, and
Not Danny Pink. This is not 5 minutes of Danny Pink right now.
No, this is 5 minutes of Danny the listener. I'm not going to throw out his last name just because we didn't okay this with him first that we were going to talk about him, but he called us out because we've been criticizing Mr. Mark Gatiss lately. And so he called us out and kind of gave us a list of like, hey, guys, like, here are some other episodes that he has written. And, you know, maybe you guys have been a little bit rough on him. So so I thought it'd be interesting to look at those episodes and see what we think. Do we agree with Danny here?
Let's take a look at those episodes.
So he gave us a specific list. So we're only going to refer to the ones he's mentioned on his list. But The Unquiet Dead, Cold War, The Crimson Horror, and Robot of Sherwood.
Yes.
That's his list, I guess, of he's trying to say, hey, guys, remember these specific four episodes that are a representation of good things that Gatiss has written.
Right, because these are not all of the episodes that Gatiss has written, because the Eye Booger Monsters episode, Sleep No More, doesn't show up on this list.
Correct. So I'm going to admit something right off the bat. A couple of these stand out to me, and I can remember them vividly, like exactly what episode it is based on the title. A couple of them don't, so I'm going to have to refresh my own memory. Either you can refresh my memory, or I'm going to have to Google it really quick.
Yeah, but bring it.
We can start at the top, The Unquiet Dead. I don't remember the episode based on the title.
Christopher Eccleston, Rose, Charles Dickens... They go back in time, and the dead people come to life because of the gas lamps.
Okay, so I'm going to guess that that's one of the first episodes that Gatiss wrote, if not the first one he wrote, considering it's an Eccleston episode.
Yeah, and I think this is it might honestly be episode two of Eccleston's series.
So this might
be super early on.
I know Gatiss has been a big Doctor Who fan you know, his entire life if you've ever seen him interviewed. So it's not like he hasn't been on the scene when it comes to Doctor Who, but I wonder if this is his first writing credit. I should look it up. But if it is, I think this maybe is kind of what put him on the map as far as being a good writer, because I actually think this was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that this is... I have gone back and recently rewatched this one. I enjoyed it. This is, I just checked it, episode 3 of series 1 of New Who. Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. There was something about seeing Charles Dickens there. He's really at the end of his rope. He feels like he's washed up, and the Doctor shows up and really blows Dickens' mind, and then kind of the story progresses from there with that bad wolf storyline that's floating through.
Okay, and I did just look it up on his list of episodes he's written, and it is his first. So, okay, all right, I'm gonna agree with Danny on this one.
Yeah, good I'll episode. Give that a thumbs up. It's a good one.
All right, the next one is, I believe, Cold War.
Yes, Cold War. Yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, this is the Ice Warriors return the first time in a submarine with Clara and Matt Smith.
Ah, okay. So this is where I will disagree with Danny. I did not like this episode. Not a fan. And I don't remember it that well, I will admit that. But I do remember not necessarily enjoying this one that much. I had high hopes because this was a classic monster they were bringing back, and it just didn't do it for me. Underwater, and we're going to talk about how underwater for Doctor Who might not work all the time.
Yeah, yeah, underwater, submarine. I'm more on your side than on Danny's side on this one. It wasn't one that stuck out to me as, hey, I need to rewatch this one. Incredible story. That being said, I don't think I've watched it maybe more than twice, and it's been a while. And I know here recently things that I've watched with Matt Smith, even when they're episodes I wasn't too high on initially, they all of a sudden seem really good to me. So maybe I need to go back and rewatch this one. But initial gut reaction was, yeah, that one might not be the best piece of evidence to put forward for Mr. Gatiss.
And I think he is actually listing these in release order now that I'm looking at it. So the Crimson Horror,
yes,
maybe was even in the same season as the Cold War episode.
And if I remember right, this is more of a Dr. Light episode, or is it a Companion Light episode?
I'm trying to remember all the details. I remember this is the one where the Doctor basically, you know, he gets infected by that the Crimson Horror, I guess, some kind of disease, and then he can't speak. Is that right? And then that girl was kind of treating him like it was her own little personal monster. Do you remember this? Am I remembering it correctly?
Like, all I remember is that it had Vastra and Jenny and a little bit of Strax.
Yeah, it was that time period for sure.
Yeah, and it's a Dr. Light episode, and
he was in it, he just wasn't talking much.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? Now that I'm looking at it, you're spot on. Wow, those are some weird screenshots from the episode.
It was a weird episode. This one, this is another one that wasn't a big fan of. I will say I was not a big fan of this one. It was okay, but it's definitely not on the high end of my Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah, I think I might need to go back and rewatch this one, because just looking at all the screenshots, it looks much stranger than I would have initially.
Remember, there was like a bug attached, like some kind of leech bug attached to like the old woman's chest.
Yeah,
and then there was a rocket at the end that they had to like. They were trying. I don't know. It was all over.
It was like cultish, right? Like,
yeah,
yeah. I see. Initial gut reaction again is not the high point for me for Gatiss, but I might have to rewatch this one because it. I'm really concerned by the screenshots I'm seeing right now and trying to remember what the heck this episode was.
This one's worth a rewatch, I think, just to remind ourselves what it was all about. Yeah. And then the last one he has listed here, Robot of Sherwood. I love that episode. It's one of my favorite Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, I had forgotten it was written by Gatiss.
There honestly are things about that episode that were left unresolved in my mind, but you have Robin Hood. It's a fun story. He fights with the spoon. I would put this more on the positive side than on the not so positive side. So yeah, it would be a 50-50 split for me.
I agree. I'd say Danny, I agree with two out of the four for Danny here that he's listing, which is two more than I was giving Gatiss credit for. So he has, you know, proven his point.
Right. The ultimate question though is how many more episodes has Gatiss written? Is the only other episode that he's written Sleep No More?
No, he's only other. So let's look at it. Why not? We have a little bit of time since we don't have a lot of news to talk about. Let's see. I had it pulled up. Okay. So, as far as writing credit, he wrote The Unquiet Dead, The Idiot's Lantern, which I believe is another Eccleston episode. He wrote Victory of the Daleks. He wrote Night Terrors. He wrote Cold War, Crimson Horror, Robot of Sherwood, Sleep No More. And I think the rest of what he's... I think that's all the TV episodes. So there were a few that we didn't cover. But yeah. Idiot's Lantern, Victory of the Daleks, and Night Terrors, it looks like, were the only three that either we haven't previously talked about or were on Danny's list.
I'm trying to remember. Idiot's Lantern, is that...
So that would be... So that was actually not Tenet. Eccleston. That was Tenet.
It was Tenet, and it's where the TVs suck people's faces off, that's right?
Such a bad episode.
Is that a bad episode?
I think so. Is that... Really? Yeah, with the face... Yeah, yeah.
For some reason, it sticks out in my mind as being... I mean, the old lady upstairs that has no face, that was really frightening to me at the moment.
Frightening doesn't always mean good.
Yeah, but at least it was more frightening than Eye Booger Monsters.
Yeah. I mean, Victory of the Daleks is the one where like the kind of more elite, colorful Daleks showed up.
Okay. And that was Winston Churchill and Jimmy... No.
Winston Churchill was involved.
And Matt Smith beats the Daleks with a food item, correct?
With a Jamie Dodger.
Jamie Dodger.
Or he tricks him that it's a button for something, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a decent episode.
Yeah.
Still not like elite. I'm trying to like, if I'm looking at Gatiss's, you know, who knew this was going to turn into a review of Gatiss's work? This whole, I wasn't meaning for it to go here, but, if I look at his entire list of work, literally there's probably only one episode that stands out to me that is a very good episode. Everything else is either middle of the road or bad. Maybe I'll give him two. I'll give him two episodes that I think are like on the upside of Doctor Who for me.
Okay, give me what your second one is. I know Robot of Sherwood is number one. What's number two?
And I'd say The Unquiet Dead. It was
The
a
Unquiet
solid
Dead.
Episode. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But beyond that, you know, there's some pretty bad ones in here, like Crimson Horror, Sleep No More, or a couple that I just didn't like at all. Idiot's Lantern I didn't like. Victory of the Daleks was kind of middle of the road. Night Terrors? What's
that?
That's
the one with the giant... The kid has the nightmares, and there's the giant dolls
that are
attacking Clara and Matt Smith.
Yeah, and that's another one that was kind of just middle of the road for me. Definitely not memorable, so... I just don't think I'm a fan of Gatiss in general in his writing for Doctor Who.
The thing that sticks out to me when I look at this list is how interesting and strange and slightly creepy some of his stories are. Not scary per se, but just weirdly creepy. Like the giant dolls that attack the kid, like that's creepy to me, and the faceless grandma upstairs who's banging on the floor, like that's creepy to me, and dead people and ghosts and, like, I don't know. There's some weird things that he tosses out there. Even the eye booger monsters, like, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't know. He's, I would say that he's not, after looking at the entire list, I would say there were more downsides to his episodes than there were upsides. But I feel like I need to go back and rewatch some of these now just to make sure I'm thinking about them right.
I will say this about Gatiss, and I've probably said it in the past, is I really enjoy him as an actor in the television series Sherlock. So I'll say something nice.
That's where we'll leave it.
He's really good in that. He's a good actor. He's done some acting in Doctor Who as well, which I thought he did a really good job in the roles that he played in Doctor Who. But the writing for Doctor Who is just not, most of it has not been my taste. Although, like I said, Robots of Sherwood, that's a standout episode for me. It's probably in my top 10 all time. So that, whatever he did right for that one. I wish he wrote more of that kind of stuff and not as much some of the other things.
Well, we'll see how his Empress of Mars, The Return of the Ice Warriors, fares for season 10.
Yes.
It's coming here soon.
We shall see. All right. Are we done bashing Gatiss?
Not bashing.
We can guarantee one thing. He will never, ever make an appearance on Bad Wolf Radio. There's no way. No matter how big our podcast gets, there's no way he's ever going to do an interview with us.
We had the opportunity. I think you might have just put the final nail in the coffin.
Either that or he just will have no idea at all who we are. So he would just be like, yeah, I'll do the interview, having no idea that we have bashed him on the show.
Why not? Why not?
And then we'll love him probably after that. You know,
that's how it works.
It's kind of how those things go.
That's how we felt about Moffat until he showed up on the show. Oh, wait.
Right. Hey, we can't tell anybody about that yet. All right. Well, the only other thing we wanted to talk about before we reviewed Thin Ice was they did release a official synopsis for the story, the fifth episode, Oxygen, that is coming up, which looks like that's going to be like the zombie space people that we saw in the trailer.
Yeah.
Based on this. So it says, written by Jamie Matheson and directed by Charles Palmer, the Doctor, Bill, and Nardole answer a distress call in deep space and find themselves trapped on board Space Station Chasm Forge. That's an awesome name for a space station. All but four of the crew have been murdered, and the dead are still walking. In a future where oxygen is sold by the breath and spacesuits are valued more highly than their occupants, the TARDIS crew battle for survival against the darkest evil of all. So that one looks cool. Space zombies.
I know they did a really good job with the synopsis, right? It sets it up pretty well. I think one thing that sticks out to me is Nardole's with them.
Yeah.
Nardole.
I think he's gonna be like kind of in and out, it seems like, this season. They're gonna do some adventures without him. Occasionally he's gonna tag along. They need kind of that. I think with this episode, when you're gonna have literally zombie people, like zombie space people, you're probably gonna need a little bit of that light humor that he brings.
Hopefully, because all the images or the things from the trailers, I don't know what zombie space people would look like, but they've done a really good job of making the ones that they have look pretty concerning to me.
They look really scary. And yeah, they did a great job, because Doctor Who's not always the greatest at effects or makeup. Sometimes it can be a little over the top or cheesy, but they did a really good job with these. I mean, it looks like they walked kind of right off the set of Walking Dead. So I don't know what is a space zombie after? You know, we know, like, in typical zombie lore, they're trying to eat people, you know, either their brains or just the people, depending on what version of zombies you get. Like, are these zombies kind of trying to eat people, or what's the deal here?
I mean, honestly, based on the direction they're going with pop culture right now and Bill having all these references, I wouldn't be surprised if these zombies were pretty much part and parcel for what they have always been. They're just going to eat people or brains.
I'd be okay with that. I don't care, you know, that it's been overdone. I think it would be cool to see zombies in Doctor Who. That's something that I don't. I mean, I think it's probably been done in the classic series. I'm trying to remember. I think there has been something like that, at least like Walking Dead type people. But
I'll be interested about their explanation, right? Like, there's always a scientific in Doctor Who. There's always a scientific explanation for everything, right? There's always some sort of explanation. So I think that's what I'm most interested in for this episode. What is the explanation? Is there some sort of alien possession going on? Is there some sort of parasite? What's taking place?
Right. Yeah. I'm leaning parasite. I think that's, you know, even our, you know, there's been some scientific discoveries recently of these, you know, in insects, I think, where some kind of parasite can take over a host's body and make it actually reanimate. So they might go that direction.
Those are the reports that I avoid. I don't like those reports.
At least it's just insects, not people.
Oh, all it takes is one mad, crazy scientist, and it's going to jump. It's going to jump, Aaron.
World War Z becomes real.
I'm a zombie apocalypse prepper.
Are you?
I have my emergency buckets. I got my bus buried out in my backyard. I'm ready for it.
Well, based on the state that you live in, you're probably in the right place, because I think, you know, a lot of these zombie books, it's like you got to get to the cold climate, so it kind of freezes them. So you're in the right state.
I have my island already picked out. It's gonna be in one of the Great Lakes. I'm not gonna tell, but
you are at a good spot, really. You really are. I probably should get away from the city and move up toward you if I want to be prepared for the zombie apocalypse. How did we get to this? From space zombies.
Crazy synopsis. That's how.
Well, I'm excited for that one. That one looks cool. And all right, so I think we're ready to jump into the review, right?
Yeah. Well, Oxygen's fifth episode, right? So we just had the third, we have the fourth, and then we'll be getting there. So that's going to be 2 weeks away.
Yep. And we will talk about the fourth episode. We'll do the teaser trailer after we do our review of Thin Ice. We'll watch through the teaser trailer and do our commentary on that.
Awesome.
So we'll get to that. But for now, let's talk about Thin Ice, which was written by Sarah Dollard and directed by Bill Anderson.
Yeah.
Is this good. The...
Go for them.
I know we're getting more female writers in Doctor Who. I'm thinking this is the first one this season, if I'm remembering correctly, that was written by a female.
You are right. First one, Stephen Moffat. Second one was a guy, but not Stephen Moffat. I remember that. And yeah, so this is the first one for Series 10.
Sarah Dollard. Has she written for Doctor Who before?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot.
I know. Like, these are things that I should have.
I don't believe so. Just based on some of the things that have cropped up on social media, I think this was her first go round.
No, she wrote Face the Raven.
Oh, she did. Yes. We liked her.
Okay. So cool.
I liked her, and I just saw her birthday, and I'm very depressed now.
Now that I know that she wrote Face the Raven, I can see some similarities in the writing for this episode.
Okay.
Good to know. All right. So, so jumping into this, we had the kind of the ending of the last episode where the elephant showed up, and we were talking about how that seemed to be kind of a shout out to the classic Doctor Who, where they would jump right into the next storyline with a little bit of a teaser as the previous storyline was ending, and they jumped right into it. We literally went from them seeing the elephant in the last episode to the elephant being right in front of you at the beginning of this episode. So there is no, I mean, you could literally just have the two episodes tied together. There was no break.
Yeah, and how'd that work for you?
I think it's cool. I think it's a really cool way. I hope they do more of it throughout the season. Maybe not as a transition between every story, but, you know, every once in a while having that connection. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. I enjoyed it. I was kind of disappointed, and I'm sure we'll talk about it when we get there, that it doesn't look like that's going to continue. That it was kind of just these first three episodes where it went from one to the other to the next, and yeah, it looks like it's done now. But I really liked having that no time lost, nothing happening in between, no questions about what took place during that period of time. We just jumped right back into where we left them.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think maybe they didn't do it for this episode transition from 3 to 4, but I don't know. I wouldn't think that means they might not do it again, maybe a couple more times throughout this season. Hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I guess they could just take a break, and then who knows, maybe episode 4 leads directly into space zombies.
Yeah, so we get in this episode a continuation of what we've been talking about, where they're treating this a lot like it's a reboot. We get the explanation of why can't people see the TARDIS, or why don't people notice the TARDIS? Why do people forget when they see crazy things happen? What was some other things that came up in this one? Does time travel, or can you travel to a parallel universe? Does time travel have any negative health effects? Like, we're getting all of the dialogue that we would always, that we would get kind of if the show was brand new.
Yeah. There's been, I mean, like you mentioned, there's been talk of it being a soft reboot. I for one, I don't know, it feels like, and I feel like I've mentioned this already, it feels like we've had so much time since our last new companion that required this explanation that it's fun to have it come up again. And it's kind of, I kind of feel like that vet where it's like, haha, I knew this, and now she's just learning it. It's one of those weird things, but I like how Capaldi is even approaching the conversations, the discussions. We had Matt Smith's explanation for everything. We had his way of going about it, and now we're getting Capaldi's view of all these things that are new to Bill. And I really like those interactions that take place there. I like how Bill, her way that she approaches the questions, and the doctor, how he kind of works through those with her. There's a lot of the new things. We had the Sonic, right? The Sonic has finally been brought up. I asked last time when Bill was going to finally notice that he had a Sonic screwdriver, or when the doctor was finally going to make a big deal about it. And we had that. What makes it a screwdriver? Well, functionally, what makes it Sonic? Well, it makes a noise. Like, we had some of those different moments.
Yeah, and you had been talking about how we haven't seen the Sonic too much. We definitely got to see the Sonic a lot more in this episode, become, you know, a major part of the episode, and we even got to see it get pickpocketed from the Doctor.
Yes.
Which I'll talk about it now. I know we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit, but it led to one of the more gruesome deaths of a character that we've seen, and it was a child. They killed a little kid in a pretty gruesome way.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on that? Did it surprise you?
It did. I mean, the last time that we saw a situation... Spider, nonetheless. The last time we saw a situation like this, and it was with Davros, right? When he was a child, and all the hands come up and grab his feet, and like all this other stuff that happens to him, and the doctor turns away and then comes back to him, right? That was still left somewhat of a mystery during that period of time of what happened. And yet, there was any expectation that the doctor was going to save Spider in that instance, even when he ran over to the child, he was only grabbing for the screwdriver. Right? He wasn't going for the kid at all. Surprising.
It's kind of sad to see how indifferent the Doctor can be, but I love that they have kept that as a thing about the 12th Doctor, because he's been like that from the beginning, you know, where that guy that died inside the Dalek, remember? And they're like, and the one character's like, where is he? And he was just kind of like, oh, you're walking in him, you know, because he'd been scattered across the, you know, the liquid that they were walking in. He's always been very indifferent. And when someone does die, he seems to be able to get over it very quickly. He doesn't dwell on it, and he kind of explains why in this episode, which I appreciated. And it's not necessarily a good thing about his character, but I'm glad that it's been pretty consistent.
Yeah, and the one thing that I would say as far as consistency's sake is it seems like this series, or maybe just this one instance. Or you know what? Even in the first episode, the pilot, his indifference, he seems to have a little bit better understanding of the people around him, though. Like, it's no longer Clara feeding him cards like the episode of like Before the Flood, where he's indifferent but goofy about it, which just seemed off in those moments. Like, here he seems very stoic and indifferent. He still cares, as he mentions in the episode, but it's just he doesn't have the opportunity or the time to actually not care. Like, he does care, but he doesn't have the time to become invested in those moments. But
does he care, though?
I think he does. Ultimately, like, he cares how things move forward from that point. He might not care that about the individual that's no longer there, because that idea that what he says about morally and practically, that's a definition that you need to unlearn, whether being dead or dying. Is there any difference there? He just sees things totally different.
Yeah, I think he cares about the species as a whole, or humanity, more than he does about the individuals. And the cynical side of me wonders, is he just saying things like where he gives that little speech about human life and about how, I don't know, whatever he said. It's almost like he knew he was losing her trust, and so he knew what he had to say to gain it back.
You think he's playing Bill? You think that's all this is? He's just playing Bill?
That's the cynical side of me thinking that, because I have seen this doctor and kind of how he's acted and how heartless he can be, that it is hard for me to buy into that speech he gave, because his actions don't necessarily back it up to this point. So I kind of wonder if, you know, it probably wasn't the intention of the writers, but me as a cynic, you know, watching Doctor Who sometimes, it's like, is he just, because he's losing her confidence. Like, she is, out of all companions, she's the quickest to get to this point where she's like, I'm not cool with what you're doing. You know, I'm not happy with the fact that you have murdered people, you know, that she's not on board with this. And so he's got to kind of win her back. And he does. He gives a little 2-minute speech and she's back on board.
I feel like there's so much for us to talk about here, but do you feel like she got to that point too quickly?
I will, like, as far as being like upset with him.
Yeah, like, for us as viewers watching the story, overall, like, honestly, for the length of the story, it's been 3 days. Like, has she gotten to that point within 3 days where she's already questioning him hardcore too quickly in regards to how the story has flowed?
I did find it an aspect of her character that I'm not liking, is how judgy she is. Okay. You know, how she's just quick to just be like, oh, you're just, you know, you're this horrible person, you know, and she starts like, how many people, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like, okay, calm down. You know, like, we've been following this doctor. We know how many times he's saved the universe. We as viewers are willing to give him a pass, you know, on certain things, but she doesn't have that kind of history. But she does seem to kind of jump to the negative very quickly. And I was kind of getting annoyed with her in this episode. I'm just like, okay, back off a little bit here, Bill. You don't know the whole story. Give the man a chance.
You're getting defensive of the doctor.
I was.
You're defending him.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, this guy is taking you on he's taking you on an adventure that no one else would have the opportunity to do. He's taking you back in time. He's taking you forward in time. You know, he's opening your world, and you're going to, you know, be that negative toward him right away. Like, give the guy a little bit of a flack or slap.
Yeah. See, there were moments where, or there was, my first watch through, it was like, okay, this is really weird that she's already at this point where it felt somewhat Donna Noble-ish to me, where she's like, save him, do something. And it's like, number one, how do you know he can? Like, how do you know he can do something? But then again, I mean, she has seen some pretty amazing things. But then also to challenge him about how many people have you watched die? How many people have you killed? Like, those she seemed to escalated quite quickly in those moments. That said, like, she does have a point. She's never watched anybody die before. And we were even saying it, like, for us as viewers to see the kid die, it was kind of surprising to be like, whoa, where'd that come from? Yeah. So I don't know. There were aspects where it was like, okay, this seems kind of quick. Maybe give it another episode or two, and then I would see her start to challenge him. But considering that she never really challenged him about various things in the pilot, like, number one, she still has the picture of him in the background taking a picture of her mom. Like, she wasn't quick to jump to that one, but this she was very quick to jump on.
Well, yeah, because that was like a gift to her.
I know, but still, like, you would, given her, what we know about her personality, she seems pretty quick to jump on things.
Yeah.
She did that one slide.
Yeah, I like that you brought up Donna Noble, because, yeah, in that moment where she's like, save him, do something, that was very, you know, reminiscent of what we got with Donna in the episode Fires of Pompeii.
Yeah. Yes.
Where she was like, you know, you have to save this family, and the doctor is like, I can't do that. You know, I'm gonna, you know, there are certain things that I just can't do.
Right. And,
but then he did it anyways. he wasn't able to save this boy, though. I actually thought that when the boy went under the water, that there was going to be some sort of a reveal that the different people that had been, you know, quote unquote, eaten by this monster were going to be, you know, somewhere inside of the belly of the beast. They'd come get him out. Like, I really didn't think they were going to kill Spider. I thought they were going to get him out and save him. and then as the episode went on, I'm like, wow, Spider is dead. They yep. literally killed a little child on Doctor Who, which I don't think happens that often.
Yeah, not all that often, but he did.
But yeah, I mean, with Bill, I almost called her Rose. With Bill, she was at this point getting on my nerves to the point where I'm like, man, if I was the doctor, I'd be kind of second guessing my choice of companion at this moment. Like, okay, you're gonna give me a hard time. You know, you're gonna second guess everything I do. Let's take you back to school.
I think that's the thing, though. Like, they did a really, the writing of the show did a really good job of showing his indifference, but yet also showing his patience, and also showing, like, he mentions it. He's her teacher. He's there to teach her. Like, he's going to continue to plow forward and try to, for lack of a better way of saying it, expand her mind. I don't know if the death of children is something that you want to expand someone's mind over, but he is going to kind of push her past where she's comfortable. That's what a good teacher does. And I would push back and say that he does care about people, but he knows that those that have died, there's no point about, like, really caring about them at that point. It's just what happens afterwards. He cares about the other children, and he needed to do something about them. But
right. Yeah, that's true. You're probably right. So we get a couple unique things in this episode. First of all, the big monster, which isn't necessarily the villain or the bad guy in this, is this giant sea creature that is basically the length of the Thames.
Yeah, pretty long.
which was interesting idea. So the idea of an ice fair, where the river freezes over and they have this festival, is that something that's historically accurate, or is that something that they kind of made up for the show?
I believe it is historically accurate. I believe the Frost Fair is legit.
Okay.
But now I feel like a fool for saying that, and like someone's gonna call me out and be like, "You goof, it's fiction."
It could be fiction, but it's an interesting idea. Definitely something I could see being historical, even if it's not. But I guess the explanation was that this creature was emanating the cold, and which was freezing the river over, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they never said it was an alien. We even have these fish that have these green lights on them that are luring people. They never said anything about them being alien. The ultimate bad guy in the episode was not an alien. So this is all like Earth-based stuff going on.
Yeah, and it was interesting because like that question of whether or not it was alien, like it get, or even the guy was alien or not, it came up a couple times. And then ultimately the doctor says in regards to the thing in the Thames, like, at this point it doesn't matter, like, whether it's extraterrestrial or terrestrial, like, it really doesn't matter at this point. It's just what we do moving forward, which I don't know, I guess it doesn't have to be, but those anglerfish, the ones with the green lights in front of them, they melted the ice, so it seems a little bit out of the ordinary.
Yeah, he was kind of just saying that they had evolved to be whatever they needed to be to lure people in. So I guess the indication here is that this creature has actually been there long enough that the fish or other creatures that are in the river have evolved to kind of coexist with the creature.
Yeah.
Which seems, I mean, like, it means that that creature has been there way before the family that started taking advantage of the creature came into being.
Yeah, that's what Lord Sutcliffe said. Like, it's been around longer than anybody knows. It's just been there.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, it does, you know, it kind of stretches a little bit what we would believe, that there could have been some sort of a sea creature living in that river with fish with glowing green lights without that ever making any kind of impression in history. But like the doctor said, well, you know, humans have a way of ignoring those things when they need to.
Out of curiosity, it just struck me. Do you think this at all plays into the return of the Ice Warriors?
I don't. I think it's completely unrelated.
Completely unrelated?
Yeah.
Cool. I kind of think so too. It just hit me. Ice.
Baby.
I mean, yeah, thank you. That came to my mind, but I didn't say it.
You didn't do it.
yeah, but I don't know. It's just, yeah, we'll see. Especially since, like, it's always been there. And
it could. I just feel like, unless it was written by the same person, which I didn't look at who the writer of the next, or Gatiss writes it, right?
Yeah, Gatiss writes Empress of Mars.
So I think it's just unrelated coincidence. There are a couple episodes with ice, really, you know, in it. But speaking of ice, part of the thing with this is these little fish, these kind of like angler fish looking things, would come up to the surface with their green lights, lure people, which I don't know why they had to really lure people, because people were already on the ice anyways. But they lure people to a certain spot, and then they kind of bring them under the water and then refreeze the ice, which seems like a pretty good skill to have as a fish. Like that, yeah. That's quite an evolution these fish have made.
That's awesome.
But, but which means that the doctor and Bill have to go underwater.
Yes.
They have to go into the river. They want to get a closer look at this monster. This was kind of a downside of this episode for me. This whole scene where they go underwater, I was just like, okay. I feel like there was a different way they could have done this.
Yeah, I don't have fond memories of Doctor Who under the water. So I agreed. I wasn't too keen on... I'm not too keen on Doctor Who under the water. I prefer him on dry land or in space.
With a lot of it was just kind of them finding scuba gear in this time period, like the fact that it would be readily available for them to find, the ability for them to use it effectively without any kind of training. I don't know, maybe
there's
the doctor.
Logistics, right? Like, there's, who's pumping the oxygen?
Yeah, right.
To the scuba gear. And my big question is, how in the world did they get out afterwards? Like, it was fairly deep, and yet they just kind of crawl out of a hole in the ice. Deep. How did they get up to the surface?
That part, yeah, because you're not swimming with all that weight stuff that weighted down.
No, you're not going anywhere.
They just
pop
back up to the surface, right? And they happen to find a fishing hole because somebody had cut a hole in the ice to fish in. What if that hole wasn't there? You know, there's just there's a lot to it that I'm just like, okay, this is really, you know, pretty ridiculous that they were able to pull this off. Just being that cold under the water too, and I was thinking, like, a simple solution, because they really weren't under the water that long. The only reason they needed to go under the water was to actually see the creature. And I was thinking, why not just have the doctor, like, pop the TARDIS down underwater, use the TARDIS's little, like, kind of sphere bubble that it has that can kind of protect people, and, like, kind of, you know, see it. You open the TARDIS door, you see a beast, you take the TARDIS back up. You know, they could have completely skipped the whole, you know, underwater scuba dive suit stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like if anything would have been missed out at that point by not having them go underwater in scuba gear. And I think the only thing that would have been missed out is that they wouldn't have been able to wear underwater scuba gear.
Yeah, the visual, I guess, of them wearing the scuba gear, I think maybe the producers of the show thought that would look cool. And then the fact that the Doctor does later on in the episode, you know, as part of the way he defeats the bad guy, is he does go back into the scuba gear and goes underwater. So they had to establish the use of it early on.
Yeah, and what kills me is that when the Doctor does do that again, how does he get out of the water? He climbs a ladder. Like, he doesn't just pop up through some hole in the ice in the middle of the river. Like, he is on the dredger's docks and climbs out of a ladder. It's just like, oh, come on. He can't just pop out of the water like that. But anywho, that was one thing about the episode that did kind of grind my gears.
It's the whole, you know, where did he get the tea? I mean, it doesn't matter.
Where'd the tea come from?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we get child actors. We talked about Spider dying, and but there were a bunch of other child actors. We were giving the actor from Smile a hard time, the child actor they chose for that one. But how did you think they did on this episode as far as casting the children?
Yeah, I think they got a discount rate on the child from Smile so that they could afford all of these kids. Like, I'm pretty sure that's how it worked. Because these kids, I thought they were decent. I actually liked these kids. I was pulling for these kids. I thought they did a good job, from Kitty to Spider to the other children who shall remain nameless. I'm sure they had names. I can't think of them. But
was there one named Lily? Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe in Percival, Percy.
Oh, there was a Dot.
Yeah.
Kitty.
You said Kitty that. Was the leader. Yep.
Spider died.
Spider died.
And then there's a few other ones. But yeah, the only thing was they were a little like spot on, stereotypical, like straight out of Oliver Twist. Even down to kind of the costumes and stuff that they would wear. It was just like, okay, you know, they're going for a certain vibe, which I'm not complaining. I thought it worked, but it was very reminiscent of something like Oliver Twist.
They were diverse, though.
Very diverse. Yeah.
Was not diverse.
No, it wasn't. Which there was some commentary on that in this episode as well, which was pretty funny how she was pointing out like, hey, there's a lot more people of color than they showed on TV or in movies or however she referred to it of this time period. So
yep, it's a lot blacker than the movies, I think, is what she said.
Okay,
and I appreciate the Doctor's response. Basically, so is Jesus. There's just a history of whitewashing, which...
And we also got her fear of like, hey, we're in a time period where there's still slavery and I am, you know, not white. You know, that might be an issue. And the Doctor's just... You could even see it on the Doctor's face where he was like, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, this... It's almost like he's saddened by the fact that he even has to think about this.
Yeah, and one thing that I always found about Doctor Who in the past is that... They would go to times, they would go to different things, and there seemed like there was a lot of diversity in the extras that were included, and no attention was ever drawn to that whatsoever. It was just kind of like, it was just there. I'm sure some might feel differently. I kind of appreciated the fact that it was drawn out here, that it was mentioned, that it was made a point of, that... there are some other things to think about, especially for Bill, as she goes into the past and where they go. And it's not just, oh, everything's fine and everything's happy, you can just go wherever you want to. There are some things that need to be taken into consideration. And I thought that Doctor Who, at least in this episode, handled that fairly well. And I appreciated the punch by the Doctor. That was an awesome punch by the Doctor. I don't think we've ever seen him take a punch like that or give a punch like that.
Apparently in Hellbent, he punched somebody in the face. I was looking it up if he had done it before, but I don't remember the moment. But so you brought up the punch. Well, first you had brought up, we had talked about how she was a little nervous about being in this time period, we had actually seen a similar situation when Martha went back in time. I think it was the Shakespeare Code, where they went into the time and she kind of had a similar conversation with the doctor. So I thought that was a nice callback as well. But talking about the punch, the so we get this guy Sutcliffe. I don't forget what his, if he's like Baron Sutcliffe, Lord Sutcliffe, or Sutcliffe. So we get this guy, and the doctor thinks, you know, well, kind of to set the stage for it, this family has been utilizing the creature as a source of fuel. So they're purposely feeding people or drawing people to these ice fairs to have the people be consumed by the creature, and then the creature creates this fuel that is like 100 times better than coal or whatever the numbers they threw out. So it's a pretty big, tempting thing for this time period in the industry, as they're, you know, these type of fuels are very valuable. Yes. And so it's, this family has been taking advantage of that. We get this Sutcliffe guy, and it was a funny interaction where the doctor is talking to Bill and he's like prepping her. Like, hey, this guy's going to come in, like, you got to be calm, da-da-da, you know, all this stuff. And then the guy comes in and starts talking to the doctor. He calls him Disco Doctor, which was a nice callback.
Yes, and Dr. Then, Disco.
Yeah, Dr. Disco.
Fairfield Club.
And then before him and the doctor even start to have a conversation, the guy notices Bill, and her fears came true. You know, this guy is like, starts talking to her like she's a lesser person because of the color of her skin. And the doctor just is not having it. You know, he just gave her the speech about staying calm, and then he just punches the guy out. So it was a pretty good moment.
I mean, it's a pretty good punch, which I don't know, like towards the end of the episode, the doctor wearing full scuba gear reaches down and pulls Bill up like a, I don't know, like a 5-foot ledge. He just reaches down and pulls her up. Yeah, he strains a little bit, but he must have some extra strength that we don't give him credit for, because that was a solid punch, and he just lifted a person up while wearing full like lead scuba gear. I think he's stronger than what we give him credit for.
Yeah, maybe it's that extra heart, you know, pumping the blood through his body. He can do things we can't do.
There you go.
I mean, he is alien, so there's something to be said for maybe he does have a little bit more strength than a human would have. And it would explain some things that he's been able to do. He's really good at soccer, too.
And he's really good at soccer. Really good.
But, yeah, so this Sutcliffe guy gets punched out by the doctor. But he's trying to continue his, you know, his thing here where he's feeding these people to this creature. So I'm trying to remember now what the plan was. Was he was going to blow up what?
He was going to blow up the ice.
To just have everybody fall in?
Yeah, so essentially what it was going to break down in is everybody's on the ice, he needs to make sure that he feeds the monster, ramp up production, what have you, have the elephant on the ice, everybody wants to see the elephant, the ice gets packed, you blow up the ice, everybody goes down, and the monster eats everybody, and then you have more fuel.
Oh, that's right, and then, yeah, because he had been disappointed by the production of this creature for a while.
Yeah.
And he said it's the first time he's been, you know, cold enough to freeze the ice in a while, and that the plan was to kind of have this big explosion that they were going to cover up as like a fireworks accident.
Yep.
And then he was thinking, you know, oh, people aren't even going to notice. They're going to just think it's this tragic accident. They're going to get past it, and then he can go on with his life as a rich person because of taking advantage of this creature.
Yeah. Yep, pretty much.
Okay. Now I'm remembering. But We got an interesting moment in the episode where it was actually reminiscent to the episode with the dragon moon egg. We should remember the name of that episode so we quit calling it something wrong.
Nope, it's fine to call it dragon moon egg. Okay. That is the name of that episode from now until eternity.
Okay, so in the dragon moon egg episode, we have a moment where the doctor puts it on Clara to make a decision for the humankind. He's like, this is your decision to make. You're human. I'm not human. You should be making this decision. He did the same thing with Bill, which I thought actually was a little bit of a turnoff to me because I was like, I feel like this just happened. Like he's really? Using the same lines, different companion.
Oh, come on now.
I don't know. I thought it was too soon. I thought it was too similar of a moment where they could have done something a little bit different.
See, thing number one, he doesn't remember Clara even exists.
That's
so
true.
He
what
doesn't
do?
Remember he knows. He doesn't even remember that he's used these lines before.
He forgot that he already used this line on a different
girl. I mean, he's been saving this one for so long, and he forgets that he's already used it. Thing number two is, like, I find it interesting that Clara had been with Smith for so long. Then Capaldi comes along, and there was a much greater relationship there. And Clara was in a totally different position at that point when he forced Clara to make that call, make that decision. And here's Bill, again, 3 days in with the doctor, as far as traveling with the doctor. I'm sure there was more where he was her tutor leading up to this. But there's not that much of a relationship, and he's already pushed her to this point. I think because of the conversation they had earlier where she's, how many people have you killed? How many people have died? And the doctor saying, sometimes you don't have the option. You just have to make the choice. I think, it was him acting as the teacher, pushing her to feel that uncomfortableness and look at things from a different perspective. But
so you're saying he was manipulating her?
Definitely. Yeah. Every good teacher does.
He definitely was. This is the cynical side of me again at this point, where I'm thinking he's not actually giving her a choice. He knows already what she's going to choose. He's making her feel like she's making the choice.
Isn't that what she says, though, where she says that you already know the choice. The choice has already been made. And he said, no, I can't make this choice. You have to.
Was like, what did he say? Only fools know the answer or something like that.
Only idiots know the answer. Yeah, you're right.
So it was kind of like I thought she was implying to him, like, hey, you're the genius here. You're the guy that's traveled the world. You know the right answer. And then he turned it around on her, saying, no, you need to make this call. But he already knew what she was going to say. You know, it's a little bit different, I think. But he knew that she wasn't going to let this creature die. Or at least leave it there as a prisoner. So I think it was kind of one of those moments. Another one of those moments where he's trying to seem a little bit more human than he really is. Or trying to act like he cares a little bit more than he actually does. But in the end, he's actually manipulating this person.
I guess in a way, yeah. I mean, it is manipulation. But
since when, like, if you look back at throughout the entire Doctor's history, even if we're just talking modern series, since when did the Doctor let humans make the decision? He has been doing this for 2,000 years now, where he's the guy that's kind of making these calls, and he's doing what's best for humans. I mean, he was calling humans monkeys at some point, you know,
apes.
Even as he's referring to this creature, like, well, maybe this creature will be smart enough to keep away from you guys now, you know. He's been negative on humanity plenty of times, that when he does something like this where he's kind of like, oh yeah, you know, you need to make this call, or yeah, I really do care about humanity, like, it's just like, do you?
So here's the question: if he's manipulating, is it bad if he's doing it for his or for her own good, or do you think he's manipulating for his own benefit?
I do think
who benefits from this manipulation in this instance, if we were to say it was manipulation.
I don't think he's manipulating her in a vindictive way. I think he thinks he knows what's best, and that's the doctor. The doctor in general thinks he knows what's best for everyone. It's kind of one of his flaws. And so I think because he thinks he knows what's best for her, he's manipulating her to make the right call. But in the end, he's manipulating her to do what he wants her to do.
Okay, yeah. You know what I mean? I'll accept that answer. That's a solid answer. Nicely done for that question I put you on the spot with.
So what else stands out in this episode? So we did get a speech from the doctor.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was like in his top speeches, but it was a nice little speech. And I liked that I kind of liked how the guy, whatever his name is, Suffolk or whatever. Sutcliffe makes the comment on the speech. He's like, oh, very articulate, you know, very, you know, he gives this little
the rhythm, the vocabulary, quite outstanding.
His little critique of this doctor's speech, which I thought was funny, because it's kind of like what we've always think whenever the doctor gives one of these speeches, but this guy's vocalizing it.
Yeah, I mean, so it's, you already said it's not his top speech. Give me one that's better.
From specifically this doctor or any doctor?
Yeah, from Capaldi. Was this Capaldi's best? It might not be the doctor's best, but was this Capaldi's best?
I would say this is maybe, it's not even in his top two. So the two better that I can just right off the top of my head is when he was talking to the two people about the box, the button in the box and all that.
Okay, Zygon invasion.
Zygon invasion. You get that big, you know, he's talking about war and all that stuff. That was an amazing speech. Probably his best speech.
Okay, I'll take that.
The other one is the one where it was, and I'm not remembering the name of the episode, but the paint.
The boneless?
The boneless, yeah. The pictures and stuff that would come alive.
Yeah.
Where he kind of just tells him who the boss is. I like it when the doctor has those moments where he's like, hey, I'm the doctor. You should run. You know, that kind of 11th hour kind of moment.
Yeah.
He had that with the boneless, which I think was probably his second best speech. So this, I mean, just off the top of my head, I'd say maybe this falls in number three, but I'm not remembering some of the other ones maybe.
Okay. Interesting. This one, I thought in context of the episode, was a very, very good speech. It was short. It was shorter than most of the speeches that the doctor gives. But I could see the Zygon invasion speech being better. I don't know if I'd put this below the boneless speech. Those were the two that I had in mind. There was one other that was lingering in the back of my mind, but for the life of me, I can't bring it forward now.
I'm trying to remember if there was anything to do with like Face the Raven or Hellbent or something.
There probably were.
But I'm just not, they're not jumping out to me. But those two, whenever I think of this doctor and I think of like some of his best dialogue, I think of those two speeches.
So yeah.
This one was okay for me. I think part of it was I did feel like he was just saying what he thought she wanted to hear and it didn't come across as completely sincere to me. And so I think that was part of why it didn't resonate with me.
It was his delivery, or it was what you viewed his motive as being?
Motive, I think, hurt it for me.
Yeah. Huh. See, we just saw things differently this episode.
What's new, man? What's new?
Your cynicism, dude. Your cynicism.
But I'm not, you know, I'm not saying that I didn't like this episode.
We haven't gotten to that point yet. You haven't said that one yet.
Yeah, we haven't gotten there.
5 minutes. Yeah, so anything else about this episode? I feel like we've covered some of the bigger themes of the episode. There was the diversity aspect that was thrown in there. There was the speech by the doctor. There's the children that are running around. Anything else? The use of psychic paper.
Yeah, we got the psychic paper back, which is another kind of thing where we're getting all the stuff we need to know about the doctor. So if this is your first time ever watching Doctor Who, you're getting everything in the first few episodes.
There was no explanation of the psychic paper, though. He just held up a blank piece of paper. She said something. He said, oh, I haven't gotten that one in a while. And then they kind of like went on with it.
That's true. Yeah, you didn't get the explanation. And he didn't even tell her that it was psychic paper. Like she saw what she needed to see, and then the other people saw what they needed to see, but he never told her that he was kind of tricking her.
Yeah, she never questioned it at all. But it was just, here's what it is, and move on with it. So I wonder if we're going to see that again, if that's going to come up, and he's going to do something with her again in that way.
Well, I guess the big thing we need to talk about is kind of how the episode ends.
Yeah.
They come back to... They get back to his office. Nardole shows up with the tea, you know, that we had, you know, two episodes ago knew that he was going off to get, which I love that. Yeah. I love that he shows back up. He's like, I put some coffee in it for flavor. You know, he's acting like, oh, yeah, isn't it so good that you're keeping your oath? And then he realizes their outfits are all wrong.
Yeah.
Which is perfect. It's so funny.
The doctor was in his favorite tea drinking clothes.
Yeah, that was a good explanation. So all that interaction was really funny. And then you find out that the little boy, one of the little boys that was part of the kind of the street rats, for lack of a better term, they, you know, he kind of changes the will of that family, and now that boy, you know, inherits the entire fortune.
Yeah, there was something, I don't know, the couple times that I watched the episode, there was something about that last scene as the doctor is sitting down and he's like scraping away at the paper, and then he's writing in something on the paper. There's something that seemed off about that scene, but something that I really loved about that scene as well. I don't know, like, I guess I just never saw the doctor as being the one that would like change something like that. Like, he would find some other way to do it, but just watching him change it, that just seemed off to me. But then on the other hand, it was really cool to see him do that, and then just some of the looks that he was giving to the kids in that final moment before they took off again. That was another thing about the episode. How many times the doctor brought up that he was a thief, or he could steal, or he respected the con men. And like, that came up last episode when he said he stole the TARDIS and all of that. But this episode, they like really hammered that in, that he is a con man and a thief and he can steal whatever he wants.
And he appreciates other people that can do it well too.
Yeah. Like, I don't think we've ever seen that before of the doctor. Have we? Am I missing something?
Not like in this way, I don't think. I don't think we've ever got it where it's almost a sense of pride for him.
Yeah, like, wasn't he embarrassed that he stole the TARDIS? Like, he didn't want to bring it up? But
Not 12.
He's stoked that he can take anything and everything that he wants as he runs out of the place with a hat full of pies.
Fish pies. Anyways, two episodes in a row now that we're getting fish food, which I thought was interesting. Maybe a coincidence.
Anyways, how the episode ends, right? Nardole.
We see Nardole. He goes to the vault, the mysterious vault, and he's kind of talking to whatever's behind the vault, you know, behind the door. It's like banging on the door, and he's talking to it.
And I want to pause right there for a second, because I think a question that I had from the pilot, episode one, is finally answered in this moment. When it comes to Nardole, however we want to go forward pronouncing it. But in the pilot, as he's walking Bill into the office, he's very squeaky and a bolt falls on the floor and he like kind of kicks it away.
So he's been reassembled.
In this episode, he finally says that he's been reassembled. Like that.
I didn't ask to be reassembled.
Right. Okay, so that answers that question in my mind, right? Because he was just a head, and now he has a body. How did he go to that point? Well, he's a robot. Android.
Yeah, with a human head. Cyborg. Yeah.
Cyborg. However we want to...
Technically.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I kind of had forgotten about that. But, so he's having this interaction with something behind the door. So now it seems that they're revealing at least that there's some sort of a living creature behind there. It's not like an inanimate object or a treasure or anything like that.
And whatever's in there is actually like awake. It's not in some sort of sleep. It's active in there.
And it's a threat because he's like, yeah, maybe the doctor's distracted right now. I think he refers to Bill as like his toy maybe, or like he's got his little toy.
He has a new little friend.
Yeah, okay. So, and he's just like, yeah, he might be distracted now, but as long as I'm here, you're not getting out or you're not going to come back, or however he worded it. So we get that. We know there's something threatening. Nardole seems to be pretty serious about keeping it behind the door. And then we get the kind of the knocks, you know, it's knocking. And then, of course, because we know the master is coming, and that was such a big thing with the sound of the drums and the four knocks and all that tied in with the 10th Doctor, you're kind of counting the knocks, right? Like, as you hear the knocks, you're kind of counting them.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there four in a row? Is it a pattern? Like, and the first time I watched it, I did not. Like, I was thinking it the whole time, and I'm listening for the count, but it seemed like it was going in, you know, threes, like knock, knock, knock. There'd be a pause, knock, 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 which with the master was always the four knocks. But then talking to you before we started recording this, you had said, no, I think the last set of knocks was actually 4. So we listened back to it, and you're right. The last set was 4. But you get a couple sets of 3, but then the last set was 4. Is that like an obvious reference to the fact that the master is behind the door, or are we just, as you know, people that like to read into things, reading into this too much?
Yeah, this is where I kind of go back and forth in my mind, right? Like, if there had been no reference to John Sim's master, if we wouldn't have seen John Sim in the trailer, if all of this stuff wouldn't have already been coming around, would I personally have heard the knocks and had any thought whatsoever back to John Sim's master? Like, would that have even been in my mind, or would I've just been like, oh, there's something alive in there? I'm not sure, but because of what we know, that is immediately what came into my mind, is like, hey, we might know what's in the vault. Like, there's knocking, and it just so happens that the last final one, the one that sticks with you, is 4 knocks. That has to be who it is, right? But I still have this sneaking suspicion that I'm reading too much into it. But maybe I'm not. Like, maybe it's not as clever. Maybe they're, yeah, I don't know. What would be more clever? Fooling us and making us think that it's not, or having it actually be? I'm not sure. What were your thoughts?
I think that they are purposefully putting Nox in at this point, where you may think, okay, that you're starting to think along the lines of the master. They didn't make it any secret the master's coming. It wasn't even a leak. Like, that was an announced thing, that the master's coming back. So I think that they're playing with us right now. I think they know we there are certain elements that we are going to associate with the master. And I think this is one of those things. They throw these knocks behind a door, and they want people to jump to that conclusion. But I think they're toying with us. I actually don't think it's the master in the vault. I mean, obviously the master is coming. Maybe what's in the vault will be associated to the master, but I don't think the master has actually been stuck in this vault for 50 years or whatever.
So what's in the vault?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to be the master. I don't think they're going to open the door and John Sims is going to be there.
Can Cybermen knock?
Sure. Why not?
Would they?
Well, Danny Pink knows how to knock, so he probably, you know, disseminated that information to the
Are you going on record and saying that Danny Pink's in the vault?
Danny Pink. That would be
Is
amazing.
That what you're saying? You know how amazing that would be? Last episode and Danny Pink comes bursting out of the vault.
No, this is how it would happen. They open the vault. Danny Pink comes stumbling out, you know, Cybermen, all Cybermen up. And he's like, remembers the doctor. And he's like, where's Clara? And the doctor's like, who? And it's just even more tragedy for Danny Pink at this point.
You're saying that the doctor would say, Clara who?
Clara who?
That's like fans' worst nightmare right there, right? Like, that Clara is a doctor in and of herself. Like, that would be the worst way for it to end.
No, I can say with 99.9 certainty that it's not Danny Pink behind the vault. I'm pretty sure they're not going there. We would have heard the cast announcement of him coming back, of the actor coming back.
We would have seen something by this point in time. No, I'm still like, I am happy for this ongoing mystery of what is the oath? Like, why did the doctor make a promise never to leave Earth? What is this oath, and what's in the vault? Like, I'm loving those aspects right now, even if it does just get tossed into the last 5 minutes of an episode. If Nardal can continue to be just that reminder, he serves his purpose.
All right, so let's talk about the next episode. So we have, because oddly enough, the title of the next episode is Knock Knock. So we were just talking about knocks, and now we have the title of the next episode. Maybe it's, you know, I'm assuming that's connected. But they did show a little preview for the next episode.
They did.
Which I have not watched yet. So I'm going to watch it right now. I just hit play. It's only 34 seconds. And I'm watching it. So that... Oh, wow. Okay. Lots of teenagers. Bill's hair looks a lot different. It's a bit of a horror aspect to it. I think
they're university students.
And this is the one where we get the older gentleman who everyone was so excited about being cast in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
So, okay. Yeah, that one looks pretty creepy. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of young adults running around. And then I think this is the one where you get the people that are kind of, they look like they're made out of wood.
Yeah.
Which is reminiscent of one of the Christmas specials.
Yeah, I hope slightly different though.
Okay.
not gonna lie, that wasn't a high point for me. But
no, I didn't like that episode.
I can see how you would draw the immediate correlation.
You don't think it's gonna be the same aliens or whatever?
No, I think they're gonna be different.
Okay. So we do have a synopsis here, which might shed some light on it. Bill is moving in with some friends and they found the perfect house. So what if it's strangely cheap to rent and the landlord is a little creepy? The wind blows, the floorboards creak, and the doctor thinks something is very wrong. What lurks in the strange tower at the heart of the building, and why can't they find any way to enter it? So I guess it's people she goes to school with and they're just renting a house.
Yeah, it's the foundational elements of like every campy horror movie, right?
But this isn't the wood lice episode?
No, this is. This is the wood lice episode. Oh,
okay.
This is the one that has the immersive experience.
Ah, okay. All right. This one has potential. I think we might like this one.
Yeah, I am interested to see how it plays out. Again, I like the guy who is in this episode, Hercule Poirot. That's what I know him from. I've always liked him as an actor from the first time that I watched anything with him. So I'm stoked to have him included. David Suchet. I probably am killing his last name. But I'm stoked to have him in this episode. And overall, like, it looks like it could be a fun one. But it does make me wonder, like, how much time has passed between episode 3 and episode 4 with Bill all of a sudden moving in with fellow university students.
True, true. But yeah, so I think that pretty much covers it for this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. Unless you had anything else you want to talk about.
No, that pretty much ends it.
All right. Well, one thing I did want to mention is our new Instagram that we're doing, because it's out there, and you did this really cool like Instagram story where you pretty much live Insta storied Thin Ice.
I did.
Where I didn't even know that you were doing that, and I came across it as I was going through my Instagram feed, and I was thoroughly entertained by your live Insta storying this thing. And so nice. I'm like, more people need to see this. I may be the only person that, you know, that did it, and those only stay up for like 24 hours, right?
Yeah, they're short-lived.
So by the time this episode airs, it'll already be gone, which is the sad part of how those things work. So this is my pitch to anyone that's listening to this. If you're not following our Instagram, which we just literally just opened it up like last week, I think it's at Bad Wolf Radio, right?
Yeah, I mean,
we actually got the name.
Yeah, it's at Bad Wolf Radio. We are the only ones out there. We don't post all too often, so we're not going to fill up your timeline with a bunch of memes or anything like that. But yeah, hopefully going to start doing a few more stories as episodes come out and sharing thoughts that way.
Yeah, so if you are on Instagram, I beseech you to go and follow at Bad Wolf Radio. Because Adam's been putting some really cool content on there, not just in the Instagram feed, but also in the stories. So if you do that kind of thing, I promise you that there will be content there for you to check out. No pressure, Adam, to keep it up.
It's all good.
The more people that follow it, the more people we know are looking at it, the more we will, want to continue to put content on there. So if you haven't followed us yet on there, jump on over to Instagram right now and jump and follow at Bad Wolf Radio.
Yeah, and truth be told, same thing goes for the Facebook page and Twitter handle. The more that we can interact, the more fun it becomes. That's having y'all's thoughts on Facebook page, on Twitter. It's always fun to read through and not just get Aaron or I's my perspective on things. Y'all have some good thoughts to share as well, so definitely toss things up on Twitter, Facebook, and then Instagram. Feel free to share some stuff.
We want to hear from more people than just Danny B.
Danny B.
we get Jason F and Danny B, and the other Jason. Yeah, those are our top three interactors. We need to add to that list.
There's also Amanda. We can't forget Amanda. She's been jumping on and leaving comments as well. So
yes,
there's a small community forming.
Shout out to Amanda. We'll keep things rolling. And I feel bad now that we've actually named a few names that we haven't named everyone. But you guys know we love you, and we'd love to hear more from you guys on all of the social media. And you know where to find us. I think we've said it enough times. But you can also find us on the Pod Tyrant Network over at Geek Tyrant. Hit us up over there to download our episodes, and you can also find us on iTunes. And until next time,
later days.